Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
At one point, when Lori Lightfoot, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, turned at her inauguration speech and told the aldermen that making cash from public service was done and finished, I thought all that was missing were the dragons.
No official in the city of Chicago, elected or appointed, should ever profit from his office. Never, ever. The requirement that people must give more to access basic city services must end. And it will, starting today.
There it was, in its elemental form. You can put what you want on Lori Lightfoot's inaugural speech, and many have. Some were virtue signaling about how she finally has to talk about race in Chicago, because few will talk about it. Really? Few talk about race in Chicago? I've been doing this for more than 30 years, and in all that time, all we seem to be talking about is race and nothing else. That kind of talk is idiotic, but typical. They want her to drive that intersectional highway on the intersectional bus, and Lori seems happy to do it too. Intersectionality in politics in big cities, yes. She's the first black, gay woman mayor. I get it. And I wanted her to be mayor. But listen, ouch! You just lost a tire in that pothole of red budget ink. And red budget ink potholes have no intersectional politics. It's just red ink to them. And the Iron Bank doesn't care about your politics. It merely reads the sums. It sees the deficit. It is the money, and the money runs out. There is no money for teachers, no money for cops. And then what kind of city do you have? And then can you eat your talk about race? You can't eat it, and you can't pay people with it. And then others want her to end gun violence, or whatever that means. End gun violence. She said it too, end gun violence. Let's be honest with what it is. It is gang violence, street gang violence, gangs killing for the right to sell dope that comes up from Mexico. But hey, virtue signal all you want about seizing guns. It sounds nice in fantasy land. And your friends with those hate has no home here signs in their front yards will love you. In Chicago, in African-American neighborhoods, black people don't want to give up their guns. And that's the reality of politics. They keep guns for protection. Grandmothers keep guns, grandfathers. Why? Because they know cops won't get there in time, especially now, especially after Laquan McDonald and Rahm. So good luck with that. We're doing the midweek podcast before I write my first column of the week, but I must commend Mark Brown of the Sun-Times on a nice line. Quote, in the future, Lightfoot should find it advantageous that the city council chamber is designed so that she will always have the aldermen in front of her, where she can see them while speaking to them. That was a nice line, because she's got to guard her back. My take, the point of her speech was the point that no official should profit by public service, and that ends today, she said. I've heard it before. She did not run a messianic campaign like Harold Washington. There was not that racial cultural fervor. During her campaign, Lori Lightfoot spoke rationally, calmly, not exhorting like Joan of Arc, not like I'll take it from one tribe and give it to another, but explaining that all those days are over. She should know, and she has a lot of Daily people around her, so maybe she should ask the Dailies, are they poor? Or the hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the room watching her make the speech, not all were true believers. Many were involved in politics, and many got involved in politics because of the money and the treasure. And here to talk about it all is Will Lee, the three-eyed raven of the Chicago Tribune, and Jeff Carlin, as always, my friend and executive producer of The Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and a man who might have drapes in this week in his home. And you know where you are. There are the dragons, the aldermen, the white walkers, the masters of whispers, the cynical financiers of the Iron Bank, the crumbling, broken city of good people. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Now here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Okay, Jeff, before I begin and before we begin, talk about Game of Thrones and Lori Lightfoot and everything, just got to ask you a question. All politics is local, mm-hmm. and there's nothing more local than your home. And I saw a bunch of drape boxes and on the public, on our text, our family text, Betty's asking the boys, telling them that the installers for the drapes are coming in, so we won't no longer be living in a diorama fishbowl where everyone can see me. Whenever they want, they can look and wave, and I've been driving. It's been driving me crazy, as you know. So I asked Betty about it. Thanks for making the coffee this morning. I see the drapes are coming in today. Honey, the drapes. You're shaking your head and you're waving your arms, but does that mean you're going to comment? I'm just going to stay here. I know how to do this. I need to get a no comment. She's not commenting. So I ask you, Jeff. She was waving her hands, and she wasn't too happy. Just think of Betty's face where she's not smiling, waving her hands like, get away from me. But seriously, not wanting to talk. Did I go overboard?
I mean, to be fair, Betty had to have known what she was getting into when you guys got married. I mean, you're John Cass. but maybe your recent history probably led her to believe that this is probably coming someday. I don't know. I mean, I've never been in that situation. I'm not married, but I couldn't imagine that scenario in my head.
Can you imagine Can you imagine bothering Christine on the tape on with a recording and saying, Christine, with your radio gear and saying, Christine, I need a comment on this. And she obviously doesn't want to comment.
Yes. I would, that would be a short conversation, but it does sound like it's a new day in the Cass household.
Well, the diorama will end. The Neanderthal diorama should be over. The thing that bothered me were people walking outside my house and looking inside. another columnist wrote once in Chicago that she likes to take long walks at dusk. And sometimes people that leave their lights on at dusk and she looks inside their homes. And it used to creep me out. I mean, I love the columnist, but it creeps me out. Or Mary Schmick.
Yeah.
And I love her, but it just creeped me out. And then all of a sudden, as soon as someone told me about that, I read the column, I look out my window, and there's a guy across the street, and he's like waving tentatively, like, shut up, leave me alone.
Sounds like you need a dragon or a Unsullied to protect your state.
Well, I'll tell you who needs protection is Lori Lightfoot, Jeff. She needs, as we talked about in the last Chicago Way, she needs people around her who know where the bodies are buried. But here's the thing. Maybe I overstated that because she was first deputy.
Yeah, I was thinking about that afterwards.
What, first deputy purchasing agent?
Yeah.
Well, the first deputy is the one who buys stuff.
Yeah.
You buy stuff? That means you buy stuff for the city?
You know who's selling.
You know who's selling. And so we're going to have to watch Lori Lightfoot too, just like every other mayor. But what do you think? What do you think her first few days were like?
I mean, it was interesting that the inauguration moved quickly from a forward-looking or an inward-looking, hey, this is why I'm here, this is what I want to do, to a rally of sorts. It was interesting how it devolved into just a rally for Lori, which I hope she's got enough wherewithal to push through a lot of the stuff that's coming her way as far as just the coverage and the energy and keep that going. But there were a lot of aldermen who were quick to come out afterwards, especially including Alderman Lopez on WGN with John Williams saying, hey, you know, this is an attack on us. You know, we're not all bad. We're not all bad. This is this blanket idea that we're all aldermen are stealing from the coffers is unfair, and we're going to fight it. She's in for a fight because she wants us. She better be nice. And that terrifies me because we saw what happened in the council wars, and we saw what can happen in the city when we're being distracted by something.
What happened in the council wars was Edward Doliak organized the aldermen against the mayor, but it was one of those. Mayor Washington was like, we're going to take from you guys and give it to our guys. Well, that doesn't fly.
Right.
What Lori Lightfoot is doing is different. She's saying you're not going to be able to make money by leveraging government, as Scott Wagspach said on the Chicago Way the other day. And, you know, Jeff, she has to be careful, but we do have to be careful as journalists, because when Alderman Anthony Beal comes out and starts ripping on somebody like Scott Wagspach, you have to say, journalists have to say, who those people are. Why? Why is Anthony Beal ripping? Because Anthony Beal is in a satellite. 9th Ward is a satellite of the 34th Ward, and the 34th Ward is run by the Austins, Carrie Austin, and she's part of Ed Burke.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's be, you have to tell people. Same with Alderman Lopez. Yeah. I like Alderman Lopez. But journalists have to say who they are. Alderman Lopez is like a functionary of Ed Burke.
Yeah.
And Ed Burke's pulling the strings. And when he gets, if he's indicted, and if those transcripts of conversations are made public in the indictment,
mm-hmm.
other aldermen who are talking to him will be lit up because he's using certain words and phrases.
Yeah.
And those aldermen have to wonder if they want to be part of an anti-Lori Lightfoot campaign in the council while at the same time they're being lit up by the federal government and the media over what was said on recordings. I know it's in the weeds, but you'll see it come out because that's why people are on the listen to the Chicago one.
Absolutely. You know, if there's one thing that'll fill the void of Game of Thrones, it'll be City Hall on the fifth floor and the future of Chicago.
Exactly. Now we have the three-eyed raven of the Chicago Tribune's newsroom, our very own William Lee at Mid-Noir Cowboy. He also hashtags under Bond Court on Sundays. If you want to really be depressed about what's going on in Chicago, all you got to do is deal with the people he's dealing with.
It's essentially Night Court without the laughs.
It's like the Lori Lightfoot speech, but reality. Will, you've been following Game of Thrones since the beginning. Now that it's the end, we have to wrap it up with you. The show sucked. The ending sucked. It was terrible. Go.
I it's growing on me. The ending is sort of growing on me after a while. It's the most overtly, I think, political episode I can recall. It was, in the long run, it was great because, you know, we got closer to rule. We did away with hereditary monarchies, which is, you know, really in the right direction.
Oh, now we're like fascism with Bernie Sanders in a blonde wig. Thank you.
We're not perfect, but we're getting there, you know, and all the main players were kind of around. It was just such a jarring thing. I was very angry at the very beginning. I'll admit that, just because there were so many things that were left unresolved. And but in the long run, I let go of my feelings of John being the king, because John didn't want to be king. He knew that. And I think in the long run, returning to the North is probably what would have made him happiest.
Where he's king of the North, he's still king.
King beyond the wall.
Men are always kings. Well. Yeah.
People love him. He will live in the part of the world where people will love him the most.
I'm with you, Will, in that. I mean, when the curtain fell, I was a little morose and a little just confused about. I'm like, oh, this is it. This is what we waited for. This is the ultimate. And then as I mulled it much more, I thought, well, it's the best ending. I'm like, I'm glad the Starks all got what they wanted. But sure. then the Bran piece of it, I still can't get over that. I can't get over that whole, hey, we're going to tie this thing into a bow and it's going to be perfect. And then, hey, look at that. There's a dragon somewhere roaming around that no one's going to mention again. I mean, there were too many little things like that, too many storylines that you're like, it really feels like they had to go A to B to C to D to E to F to G to really make it work. And they went A to F to G in reality. And all the stuff in the middle, you're like, okay.
Okay, I totally get that. I do have to ask John a question because this is very important. When Jon Snow plunged his dagger into, you know, Queen Daenerys, what was your reaction? Did you expect it to be coming? I know you did.
I was waiting for it. It was predictable. The entire thing sucked. And I just wanted to tell you, it's like watching. It's like I now feel like I'm like one of those little kids on Twitter after Hillary lost. And I'm like, not my Game of Thrones.
So did you see Game of Thrones last
night? I did. I'm sad. I'm disappointed about it.
I was just really meh.
I feel like we were getting so close to having this ending with just women running the world.
Exactly.
And then the last two episodes, right. It's like, oh, they're too emotional.
Yeah, exactly. Can't do
the
that.
The end. It's like, this was written by men.
I was even willing at the end to make a quick allegiance shift when Danny went nuts.
Right, right.
So I was over to Sansa. Yeah. I was like, Team Sansa, I will redo my shirts.
Totally.
The whole thing.
Totally.
And yet Sansa, who already is Queen of the North, thank you very much.
Right, right.
She walks away saying, and I'll still be Queen of the North.
I know.
Come on, Sansa, go for the big one.
I was disappointed. We need to get some feminist analysis up in HBO.
Well, they need some help on this.
They do.
You know, it's just ridiculous. The whole thing, I just hated it. Let me give you some. I have two consultants who gave me some points, okay? Number one, Peter did not like how predictable it became when John killed Danny. Two, no other major characters were killed in the last episode. It would have been better if Arya died trying to kill Danny. Three, the water bottle found on the set during filming of the Dragon Pit by Sam Tarly's leg. Okay. After the coffee cup, it just shows me that they've lost it. Now, Spiro, if the whole point of choosing a king is to break the wheel of succession, how does picking Bran work? Because he's the three-eyed raven and is basically immortal, right? He lives for 1,000 years. So will there never be another king?
Well, there was a line in there where they said, where I think it was Tyrion or whatever, we'll come back next year and do this again. And it seems like
he's going to die in a year.
No, but it's not until death. It's that they were going to do it every year. They were going to pick a new king every year. Or new
leader. That's
because that's easy.
Because that's stable. That's only Europe in like the 1800s. Why is Jon sent to the Night's Watch if the wall is broken and there's no more White Walkers and there's no more problems with the Wildings? The Night Watch has no reason to exist now, Will Lee. And three, does Arya, who has never had any nautical experience in her life, besides as a passenger to and from Braavos, have any idea how to explore uncharted waters?
That's a lot of questions, Sean.
Question Betty asked was Zeus fed? But could you handle the other ones? Because all those are, to me, legitimate, valid points that speak to one thing. Bad writing. Terrible writing. I can't believe it.
There were enough episodes. There just weren't enough episodes to kind of correctly. They should have just in the 10, like they've always done, and just filled in the blanks. I think if we got there a little bit more smoothly, I don't think there'd be so much anger. I think George R.R., not speaking for him, of course, I think he wanted that. He started the first book with Bran, you know, the very, first point of view character in the first book. And I think he just wanted to end it with the character he created. When we met him those years ago, John, I believe he started the book imagining everything around Bran. The boy with his family and the deserter and all of that. I think he just wanted to return to that naturally. And only Peter Dinklage guessed it correctly.
So, yeah, you still haven't answered my question. If there's no night watch, if there's no wall, and there's no problem with the wildings, there are no armies of demons or the dead. Why do you need? Why do you need a night watch?
Ice spiders.
You don't anymore. I think it's just. I think you know the people who are fighting against them. They don't know that. They don't know the history, the deep history of the Night's Watch. So, you know, to them, it sounds like a fair thing.
Now let's get to the real thing. And I know I've talked too much, and I want your your explanations both. What this is, besides I'm amused at the whole reaction, because it is a TV show and everyone's pulling their hair out. It's a TV show, right. Damn it. It's not like what we saw in Chicago with the baby or with the other baby. It's not real. But
on the other hand, I prefer this much better than that baby story, please.
Both
by all
story.
Means.
Yes.
Give me all the dragons.
But here she is. She's a liberator, but she's going to kill everyone who's in her way. So she's basically going to, and she says, I'm going to liberate Winterfell. I'm going to liberate everyone. So in the end, if she wasn't killed, it's basically Daenerys is the queen of everything.
Yeah.
And she's the boss of everything. And there are no barons or lords in her way. She burns everyone. This is fascism.
Yeah.
Or communism, which is the other horn on the left side of the same goat. Two horns on the head of the same goat. This is the show that so many young people loved, totalitarianism at the end, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a lot of things that people love totalitarian. You know, not only will the lords not fight her, they'll turn their backs to her and say, well, as long as we get fed, we'll, you know, that'll never end. And that, you know, that's always going to be the point. All they're going to have to do is say, hey, you know, whatever you want, my queen, and we'll provide for you. She'll be able to find people like that.
Yeah, well, she won't now because she's, you know, dead. What happened to the dragon?
Is she dead? Because you haven't seen her body.
Oh, no.
And all you've seen is she's carried away by the dragon.
One last thing I'd like to add to that is the one thing that it became very clear to me, and maybe you guys agree, I think the story was left off the way it was in case they decide to ever revisit it.
It certainly was. The whole idea of Arya going off, I mean, that could be its own spinoff. I'd tune in for that in a heartbeat. And they wouldn't have to worry about source material. They wouldn't have to worry about, you know, it wouldn't be anywhere near the caliber of the first six seasons of this, but it would be, it's something you could do, conceivably.
What do you do with the thousands of people who make a living commenting on Game of Thrones, or like the priests? We talked about this in a column, and you know, the National Syndicate likes the idea of me writing a final Game of Thrones column. So I ask you guys, what do you do with these propagandists, pamphleteers, revolutionaries, whatever you want to call them, who are doing podcasts and do fan theories and write about
blogs
it? What do you do with them? Don't you have to burn them too?
I don't know. I think it's the strangest thing. It's, I don't know what's going to happen. I was just telling somebody this the other day. Like, I don't think television-wise, and I've watched a lot of TV in my life, old, new, no reality TV, of course, because that's stupid. But I can say there hasn't been a cultural touchstone for a television show like this since maybe Dallas. You know, like stuff like that. Like Dallas, you have to go back that far to very early 80s to find a show where everyone is talking about it in the world, everywhere. You can mention dragons in the Tribune newsroom, and it'll stop people, and they'll circle around and start doing it. I've seen this happen.
Will has also seen, it's a way for me to have conversations with colleagues, you know, that would otherwise look at me like, oh, you're a conservative, I'm not talking to you. But if I say dragons, oh, then I can, you know, then we can talk.
Dragons are bipartisan.
Everybody loves you, John. Come on, everyone loves you.
I love everybody, but let's be real. I mean, like, if they don't want to talk to me about politics, or I might say, excuse me? What do you know of politics or something, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the great thing about the show. Everyone can talk about it. You can delve into it, and anyone can have this super rich, really dense theory about it, and it might be true, because what the hell, anything is possible now, you know, with what's going on there. So I don't know what happens after all of this, because it really brought a lot of people together. I mean, a lot of people listen to other people's thoughts, and that doesn't always happen.
And a lot of that stems from the writing initially. I mean, that was the power of it. And we've talked about this before, but how it essentially everybody in every stratosphere of culture was represented somewhere in it. And that's kind of a hallmark of, I mean, even go back to kind of Dallas. I mean, you still have that idea where you can imagine yourself either as the one in charge or the one being ruled or the one who doesn't care or the one who's fighting. I mean, there was that idea where you can akin yourself or like yourself to someone in that world. And where is that in any other context? I think that one of the most important things or ideas about this is that Game of Thrones came along right around the time that Netflix, the streaming part of Netflix, is really hitting its stride. And now you've seen this title shift where it went from HBO was pulling in all the Emmys every year, you know, the biggest heavy hitter, and now there's Netflix. And now Netflix is filling that same void, but they're not doing it with one well-thought-out, extremely well-executed, and well-written piece of entertainment or art. They're doing it with very, very specific, narrow-casted pieces of art in shorter pieces and at a huge bulk. And that's kind of indicative of the entire culture. You saw that in the 2016 election, and I always go back to this, the idea where you're insular to every other person around you because you don't care what they're doing. All you want is what's you. Your friends, the people you come together, you have the same view or stuff, but you only see it
as
you.
Your little tribe.
Right, you go to your tribe. Whereas Game of Thrones, every tribe was represented in that show. I mean, most, or not everybody, majority of them. And that's what drew people into it. And I don't, there is nothing else. I don't think there is another cultural touchstone that does that.
So then the priests will be, Willie, the priests will be like you in a sense, but you don't write a lot about it. The people who devote their time, their avocation or vocation, depending, to the show itself and fan theories and the catechism and liturgy of the show.
Right. I just don't know what show could come out that people are going to care so deeply about. You know, you have to get
the Chicago Way on Netflix with Barack Obama. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be interesting. I would watch that every week. I don't think I'd be waiting on pins and needles unless they incorporated dragons or,
you know. And speaking of which, did you like Lori Lightfoot with her dragons talking to the alderman yesterday?
Oh, that was fantastic. Everyone was talking about that. How she, it wasn't just that she called them out. She looked at them, too. Look at this.
Khaleesi.
Yeah, see the flame in her eyes.
No one knows what the future will hold, but everyone just feels that moment. Like, I remember how that feels right now? Oh, that feels good.
When she turned her head, I heard the sound of the dragon getting, you know.
Now, I was told by my family not to do that sound effect again, but I did, and you just did it. It's like it's sort of shaking a large copper sheet, yeah, exactly. Right?
Okay, and I got one last question for you, Will. Does RR finish the series?
Oh my God! See, here's the thing: like, it would be like if we were actually in an episode of Game of Thrones, I'd say no. I'd say he'd leave us hanging. I'd say he had both books written on his nightstand, ready to give to the publishers, and just before it happened, something goes up. They disappear, and they're lost forever. And all of our plans that were laid in place for, you know, the new season 8 being remade once the books come out or whatever, all of them are dashed because we'll never truly know how he ends it his way. And we'll just have to live in turmoil, you know, till then. So
he will.
Part of me.
He will now because you have, and whether they put his name on it and someone else writes it, it'll come out because. You have to, with all this dissatisfaction of the series.
Yeah, I mean,
the end,
you're sitting on a gold
mine.
This
is a gold mine. This is generational wealth, okay? Yeah. And he'll write it, or they'll come out with another...
Ghostwriter?
Yeah, whatever. You know, like Ian McEwan. Like, I love that movie. Will, another question. We know that after slaughtering everybody and killing their innocent their prisoners, we know that the eunuchs go off to the island of Nah. Right? Yeah. That's Nah, right. With the Mutsa, like Nah. All right. And they go to conquer that because they're gentle people. He goes to conquer them.
Well, yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, protect
them. Yes. Missandei. Remember her and in her honor and her memory.
He'll meet her parents and stuff, like, and they'll have sit down.
And she'll have a cute sister. Dad'll
have barbecue.
Right, exactly.
Like, we'll tell Missandei.
I did wonder what they did with her body. I wonder if they buried her, if they were planning to take her back. I did wonder that as well.
But what do you do with 8,000 screaming Dothraki? They never explained it. Are they running around like some kind of biker gang, like the Outlaws or something? Like terrifying everyone? Hell's Angels on horses? What?
In a strange land where they've never been and they have no ties, where the one person who could have kept them in check is gone. Oh, this was just, don't bring this up, John, because it just brings back all of the hot feelings I had when it ended. Because as we were inching towards the final credits, I said, no, I need 15 more minutes for you to tie up all of this stuff.
Right?
I was shouting. I was very, very, very animated about it. But, you know, I mean, Sansa got what she wanted. She's the queen of the North. I mean, you know, we haven't even mentioned her.
Yeah.
You know, the smartest, the one who learned the most. The quickest.
How could she be queen of the... When she's married in this feudal system, she's not... She's
they broke
no
the feudal
queen.
System.
She's no longer... Oh, no. It's reinforced because they left.
Well, we have to choose someone.
Why just us?
We represent all the great houses, but whomever we choose, they won't just rule over lords and ladies. Maybe the decision about what's best for everyone should be left to... Well, everyone.
Maybe we should give the dogs a vote as well.
I'll ask my horse.
There needs to be a word of warning to those now who do have this hole in their life and they're trying to fill.
The show hole?
The show hole.
Yeah.
Sounds terrible, but and it sounds weird. But you were saying the idea that, you know, all these people who are writing about it and everybody who are all the culture and the quote unquote priests about it, they're going to try serving up something new. They're all going to think they have the next new thing, the next great thing, the next big latch on, and be careful what they're selling you, because I guarantee you most of it's shit.
And copied. Copied from other source material that did it better, you know?
You mean derivative?
Derivative, yes.
The derivative nature of American entertainment, because... Why would you want to read the classics? You could, even the ancients did it. There was the Odyssey, and then there was the Aeneid. There was the Iliad, and then there was the, you know, Virgil's Aeneid. People copy what they think is good, right? But there's no, it all goes back, if you want true literature, it goes back to two sources, the Iliad and the Odyssey. And ever since then, everything else and the Bible, and it's all been made off that. Every story comes off that. It's amazing. I my brain is so big, I can't even hold it up on my neck right now. So, Willie, you'll have to find a new show for me. I would like you to find one with a private eye and a sexy secretary with great legs and maybe a guy who smokes and uses Aquavelva.
The Maltese Falcon, is that what you're describing?
He's describing Mannix.
Mannix. I was thinking, yeah, Mannix with Peggy. Peggy was beautiful. What was her name?
I know exactly who you mean, the secretary. Yeah. Mannix. Let's redo Mannix. Let's do that.
Something like that. Or Harper or something with Pamela Tiffin, who's now probably 80 years old. What can I do about that?
The Rockford Files?
No, I don't think so. I'm going to skip there. But some detective-y thing, that'll be the new thing, right? But in the meantime, we have to go because the studio is booked and others have to come in and give their wisdom, although ours is best. Will Lee, thank you for being here. Love you, man. You're awesome. Thanks.
Thanks, Will.
Thanks, guys.
For William Lee, the three-eyed raven of the Chicago Tribune's newsroom, talking about Game of Thrones. And Jeff Carlin, WGN producer of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVolantes, who graciously had me on the show the other day. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune, a man who should have drapes today. Thanks for being here on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.